The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Welcome and Happy New Year from Radio Reverb's Politics Show. My name's Geoffrey Bowden. Next month, the key council meeting for the year takes place on February the 22nd. It's the time councillors sit down to vote on the budget for the next financial year, and we all find out how much we will have to fork out in council tax and what services could disappear or be rationed by using stricter criteria. But before we get to that point, this month's councillors will have to agree something called council tax reduction scheme. This is an acknowledgement by the minority Labour administration that its second budget, if it's passed, will have adverse impacts on poorer households for whom a 5% increase will mean real hardship. The council tax reduction scheme allows for the council to establish a fund that will take up the slack to counter the discounts they will be obliged to give struggling households. The second hurdle to overcome this month is something called the tax base report. This is going to be a critical element of the budget setting jigsaw as it determines the number of chargeable properties in the city, both for council tax and business rates. With me to discuss the new budgets are Councillor Les Hamilton, Labour's lead on finances, and his opposite numbers, Councillor Andrew Wheels for the Conservatives, morning, and Councillor Ollie Sykes for the Greens.
Hiya.
Les, thank you for joining us. This is not an easy task, as you've. This is your second outing on setting a council tax, and you're proposing a tad under 5% for second year running. That's 10% in 2 years. Is this something you're happy about, or would you have preferred it would be a zero increase?
Well, as you know, we can only actually increase council tax by up to 2% without, in fact, going for a referendum. Because of the adult social care situation, we don't get any extra grant from the government, but they say, yes, we'll let you put up council tax by 3% to raise the money. So, in fact, instead of it falling on the government, it falls on us as a local authority. And as you will be aware, the pressures on adult care are so great that even if we do get that 3%, that we'll now go nowhere near meeting the extra cost of adult social care that we are predicting to have in the year ahead. So, obviously, nobody likes putting up council tax by this amount, but on the other hand, nobody would like to see our senior citizens not able to get the services that they require to be able to live as full a life as possible.
Now, I saw when in a comments column on the Argus, a comment from a former colleague of yours, Bob Carden, who complained that pensioners on fixed incomes are likely to struggle. This is 10%. Actually, it's nearly, 14% in the last 3 years, if you take the previous council tax.
More,
according to Ollie.
Compound.
So how are we going to deal with the increasing number of poorer households who are going to struggle simply to find the extra 5%? And this is not taking into account the police commissioner's desire to push up the police precept. How will we deal with those poorer households?
Well, as you probably will be maybe aware, we have a council tax discretionary council tax reduction discretionary fund that is going to have £150,000 in there. And don't forget, if somebody is on council tax reduction, 80% of the increase will be met by the council tax reduction scheme. So if somebody would be faced with an increase of £5 a week on their council tax, which is very unlikely, but a lot less than that, they would actually have 80% of that met. So that goes a long way towards it. We've got £150,000, but that is part of a general welfare reserve of £400,000, which will also cover housing and the old social fund. And we will always ensure that we have got enough money in the kitty to actually meet the demand of those people that have got legitimate claims on those three services.
Out of interest, how many people applied to this fund in the current financial year? Just give us a scale of demand.
Number of people, the total number of people is about, I think, 17,000. You've got to bear in mind that it doesn't affect senior citizens. Senior citizens still get the scheme as it was prior to the introduction of this scheme. So consequently, we are talking about the working age population. That is where the pressure is, and that is the people that are the claimants.
So we can tell former councillor Bob Carden not to worry as a senior citizen.
Bob's a very good friend of mine. In fact, I've got to see Bob tonight, and he said to me, he said, I thought I had to go have a whinge, as you said, but I know that what the situation's like. Haven't been on the council himself until 2 years ago, and he knows how the massive reduction. Don't forget, back in 2010, the last Labour government gave Brighton and Hove City Council a revenue support grant in equivalent terms of £130 million. We're now down to about 21. Now, I want to be fair, we didn't get business rate in those days. We now get half the business rate, which is about 50-something million pounds. But we are still a long, long way down, and therefore, you know, I'm afraid we have to do the best we can. And I'm sure that as a former councillor yourself, you are aware too of the problems that we have in trying to provide a budget that will meet the requirements of the city and without, hopefully, making the burden too great.
Yes, I know only too well, and I seem to recall when the Greens were in administration, both the Labour Party and the Conservatives, and we'll turn to Andrew Wheels in a minute, ganged up and stopped an increase of... Aldi, remind me, what was the...
The last below 2% cut was that it was 3.5% basically that was blocked. So we had the opportunity in 2012, 2013 to raise council tax by that amount, and that was blocked and brought down to zero by Labour and the Tories.
And the arguments put forward then, Andrew, was that this would be detrimental to hard-pressed households, except for now... Labour comes into administration and up goes the council tax by 10% in the 2 years. So where are the arguments about hard-pressed families now?
Is that for me?
Yes, Liz.
Sorry?
Yes, if you'd like to comment.
Well, there was 1 year, I believe, Ollie can correct me if I'm wrong, but there was 1 year before the 2% came in as the maximum, when there could have been a bigger increase. And I do agree at the time. I believe that was... round about the time of by-election or something, and I believe, quite honestly, there was the political element involved in that, and I can't deny that. But we certainly were never happy to go above the 2% when it required a referendum, because we felt that a referendum, in fact, would not agree to an increase of more than 2%, because the public don't have a really full idea of how the system operates, and we felt that if we did that, we would actually lose the referendum, and we'd have to rebill everybody, and that would cost us £1 million. So there was 1 year, yes, I think, when there might be a legitimate comment that can be made about it, but I think with regard to the referendum proposals, we never felt that would be a success.
Can I just make a point? I mean, I think we made the point a number of times since that year that decision, when Labour were in opposition, cost the council probably £3 or 4 million in recurrent funding for projects.
Because I mean, once the tax base has now started at a lower rate.
Exactly. So I mean, if you keep the tax base at a particular level, then you obviously lose the opportunity to raise that additional income for public services. So we lost the opportunity for an extra £3 or 4 million for public services at that time, and that is a point that we've made since then. You know, it's some time ago now, but our current council leader has said that he's not proud of what he did in opposition, and that's probably one of the things he's not particularly proud of. And Les has hinted also that maybe he wished that could have been different, because obviously, £4 million worth of public services, that's a lot of cuts, that's a lot of children's care, that's a lot of adult social care.
Andrew, it's all your government's fault up in Westminster. I'm going to say that because I'm sure Les is thinking it at the back of his mind. So you heard the scale of cuts since the Coalition and the new two Conservative administrations coming in and their budgets and so on. How can you justify this squeezing? Even the local government association, the LGA, which is Conservative dominated, has said that the cuts have gone too far and there needs to be some kind of rebalancing for local government. Do you agree with that?
I think it's fair to say that local government has borne probably more than its fair share of austerity, and I think that's borne out by the figures that we can all see. The stock response to this, of course, is that the government inherited a £170 billion deficit, and it's down to around £50 billion now, and somehow or other that deficit had to be brought down and local governments had to share in that process. I think the degree to which actual services have been squeezed is a lot less than one would expect given the scale of the funding reductions. And I think all you need to do is drive past King's House, which is vacant and has just been sold for £26 million, to recognise the fact that actually we didn't need that building, and all the staff have been accommodated elsewhere. And so the scale of the savings that have been able to be made have been quite significant, and we've seen that. I think there's also just one other point that we need to bear in mind as well, which is of course that the last year of the Green administration saw a proposal for a 5.9% increase in council tax, which of course ourselves and Labour opposed because it would have triggered the referendum as had been said. So council tax would have been a lot higher now than. For the groups that you're identifying, had the Greens plans been put into practice?
On the other hand, as Ollie says, the tax base would have been much higher, and you perhaps would have had to make less cutbacks than you are now faced with.
That's just another way of saying council tax would have been even higher, though, isn't it? If you're describing more revenue, that's just another way of saying council tax would have been even higher. So you can't have it both ways.
Okay. I think we're going to take a small pause, and Les, you've been warned that you get a musical interlude, and perhaps you'd like to tell listeners what your choice is, and we'll pause and listen to that while we gather our thoughts on the other elements of this key moment in the council calendar. Tell us what your choice of music is.
Well, I have quite a wide range of music that I like, but I must admit, I am quite a follower of country music. And I did say that a well-known singer died this year who was one of my favourites, and I've chosen one of his songs, and I thought it was very appropriate because it's called Listen to the Radio. And that's what I've chosen as my record.
And that's by
Don.
Welcome back, as the dulcet tones of Listen to the Radio fade into the distance. We return to the conversation we were having earlier about budget setting, which to the in crew who love these things is a dramatic point in the annual council calendar. I'll go around the table. Ollie, do you think we're going to have another midnight hour while amendments are debated and people go to smoke-filled rooms or what do they call it? You don't smoke anymore. You have these vape-filled rooms to thrash out some kind of compromise a la the Brexit negotiations to come up with a deal that will mean that the mayor will not have to get very agitated as we go past midnight.
Well, I mean, the priority of the administration is not to have a second budget council meeting. That's very clear. So we are going to, I'm sure, try and get all the business done on February the 22nd. And there's always been a bit of drama. I think on Labour's first budget council, we had loads of protesters at the back of the room, and we were told by the mayor not to film the protesters, then we'd be kicked out ourselves. And all the Greens were nearly kicked out of the budget council. Last year, we had lots of rewrites of various amendments and had to huddle away in rooms to finally agree a joint amendment between all three parties for one of the amendments to budget council. February the 22nd, who knows? Who knows? I'm on tenterhooks to see how it'll go.
Andrew, do you think that council is just playing to the gallery in these set pieces?
No, I actually don't. I think people need to realise that groups generally go into those budget negotiations in good faith, have some very clear priorities that they want to support. And have some political points around those priorities. And I think that it's perfectly appropriate for the city's elected representatives to go in there and fight hard for the causes that they believe in. And so I have no idea whether this will go on till midnight or whether there'll be a second budget meeting, but I think whatever happens, it will end up with the best set of compromises that we can work on.
And Les, I mean, are you expecting there to be a bit of a joint ganging up on the Labour administration by the Conservatives and the Greens to defeat certain of the measures?
Well, I don't expect anything. I just wait to see what happens. But what I would say is that, you know, in the real world, we know that when we come to the budget meeting, inevitably there will be some amendments that are put forward by the other two parties. And obviously, we always try to look at those and judge them on their merits. And last year, there were several amendments that came forward which were approved, because we acknowledge that we are a minority administration and we need, therefore, to give some, sort of say, succour to the other two parties and hope that they will give us some support. We have been through the budget review group process where each of the directorates has had meetings with representatives from each of the parties. And obviously, I will just say this here, that as always, if Ollie or Andrew want to have a chat with me about something, now, between now and then, I'm always happy and available to come in and try and see if we can look through some of these things, because clearly the more we can agree on, then the less need there will be for amendments at the meeting. But I realise that for political reasons partly, but other reasons as well, there's bound to be. I've never known a budget come through without there being some amendments from opposition parties, and I think we anticipate that's going to probably be the case again.
Andrew, last year you came up with a very cunning plan which saved youth centres, youth clubs. Have you identified something? Are you able to share with us what you are targeting this year?
Do you think I'm going to answer that question? I know you've been mad at me for, but I know this may well be, last night may well have been Lloyd Russell Moyle's last council meeting.
Yes.
And I saw his quote where he credited the administration as saving youth services. And I was just looking at last year's budget papers and we managed to reduce the size of the cut to £505,000. So I think we need to be very careful about rewriting history here. Anyway, forgive me for that, but I just wanted to...
Ollie, have you identified something where you think you might be able to get the Conservatives on side to change the Labour administration's view?
Well, we will work together, but I think our amendments last year were passed, all of them were passed on, I think, largely on their merits. I mean, I think they were, you know, we spent a lot of time on the budget last year. We thought things through. We had some common ground, identified common areas where we could work with the Conservatives. I hope we can, work with all the other two parties this year as well. I think I just want to say something, in case I don't get the chance. I think this is another cuts budget we're facing, clearly, and the presentation of it by the administration has been almost that everything's okay, but we're taking another 13 million on top of 20 million the year before, on top of 20 million the year before that, so 100 million or more has come out of our council budget over the past few years. So frontline services are being cut again across the whole of the council services. I've got a big list here. I can go through them. I won't go through them, but there are. We're losing staff. We're losing money to libraries. We're losing money to public toilets. Everything. So we want to minimise the impact of that of those cuts on the city, and we'll do what we can to try and find additional money in the same way that we did last year to make some savings and prevent the worst of those cuts where we can.
Before I bring Andrew in, and I'm sure Les will want to comment, aren't the amendments that change the course of the budget proposals really just fiddling around on the fringes, because the amount of money that is actually saved and changed from the main budget proposals is tiny in comparison to the big sums. So is this not all just kind of gesture politics? And or have I got that wrong? Andrew?
I think there's a fair criticism that the amendments are always fiddling around with 1% of the council's £200 million discretionary budget. I think that's true. I think, though, that they do reflect some priorities, and so our priorities are always to help with respect to things like respite care for disabled families, and always to support the youth service. And we're very consistent in the messages that we give every time that we participate in the budget setting process. A huge chunk of the council's budget, of course, are for things like adult social care and for children's services and children's care services. And so the degree to which it's possible to actually amend those without actually being in control of the council and the way in which those services are delivered is really difficult. So my response to people who say, why don't you shift, you know, huge resources from A to B, is we're not in charge of the council. We can't determine how services are delivered. All we can do is fiddle around with the budget at the last stage of the process.
Well, I differ slightly from that. I think, yeah, some of what we were able to do last year was, quite substantive changes to plan. So we weren't changing policy, but I mean, just the example of what we did to what sounds like a very dry topic, the contract management work. We, you know, pulled a bit of capital money to sort of fully fund some work by the council to look closely at its third party contracts, and that is expected to release, I think next year, 1.2 million in savings from more effective and efficient contracts with their third-party suppliers. So, you know, that's 1.2 million, which is going back into services and preventing cuts. I think, you know, this is a fundamental thing for the Green Group, is that we want to put the city first in this. We don't want to sit in opposition and just, you know, politically wreck everything that the administration is doing. We want to look for opportunities to make things better, and that's what we did in the budget last year.
But surely that's the motivation for every sitting councillor. They all want to put the city first, and I'm sure Les
hasn't always happened, Geoffrey, I'm afraid.
Okay, but I mean, I'm sure Les is in a place he'd rather not be, courtesy of the central government administration's cuts to central local government services. But Les, what do you feel that, you know, you're prepared to work with the other parties because you know that 99.99% of your budget will pass if you concede on a few of the fringe areas where they're likely to? And I'm looking at Andrew, who's not he's not looking like a poker player. He's not revealing anything at this stage. But I mean,
I'm more interested in the politics than the actual stuff of what's going on. That's why I'm looking poker faced.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you feel sort of slightly confident that there may well be some fringe elements that you will have to concede on, but the vast majority of your budget proposals will go through?
Well, as you rightly say, I mean, we have a net revenue budget of somewhere round about £200-210 million a year, and the amendments that come up at the council rarely ever amount to more than about £500,000. So, as you say, it's about a quarter of 1% of the total budget, and that is the case. And we do try to, but I mean, I was very surprised last year because a feeling came along to us and said, "You've got these amendments," and we considered them and said, "Yes, we can support those." We supported the Green amendments, and when it came to the budget, the Greens voted against it. So really, there's not much point in us working with people if at the end of the day they're still going to vote against it. And that's something which I find very hard to comprehend. Whether that will happen again this year, I don't know.
But less as they say, there's none such queer as folk.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I only said about losing staff. We've largely lost posts because we've been very, very few. In fact, hardly anybody's actually been made redundant by the council. What happens is people retire, we'll move on to somewhere else, and very often where jobs are going to be closed down, people are redeployed to those positions. So although we have lost posts, the actual number of staff we've lost, we've had to lose, is very, very small indeed.
So that does mean that there's going to be redundancies.
What? No, I'm just saying, very few. In fact,
very few means that there are some.
Well, I don't want to be corrected, but I think last year when I asked that they said no, we've had no actual compulsory redundancies at all. Other than, of course, there are sometimes people who are not made redundant, but who are dismissed for reasons of which obviously the panels go into, and obviously I can't go into the details with those. But the number of people, it's either very It's either none or it's in single figures. I know it's been very, very small, the number of people that have actually been made redundant.
For those people
but
being
I can't tell you off hand exactly.
Okay,
number.
But those people who have been made compulsory redundant, that's a life-changing issue.
Well, maybe, yes. But well, sorry, I haven't got that number in front of me. Last time I asked, I was told there'd been none, but that was a few months ago, and I can't obviously speak for certain about what's happened in that time, but it's very, very small compared to what's happened in some other authorities up the country,
Okay,
well, where there's been massive.
We're obviously only dealing with Brighton and Hove. Ollie, there seems to be steam coming out from the Ollie's ear pieces here.
No, I mean, I think just on staff, I mean, I think the figures 80 or 90 posts are being lost from the council of staff in this year's budget proposal so far. Obviously, we've got 1.2 million left to be identified, so there may be more. But I mean, there's two sides of it. One is it's people losing their jobs, which is obviously always it's an awful thing for them if they are made compulsory redundant, but there's also then a reduction in services. So and some of these loss in our capacity to respond to need features in the equality impact assessment. So we're down some family coaches, and this is a very highly in demand service with the council. We're losing a lot of social workers. So it's clearly it's about individuals, but it's also about the our ability to respond to the demand for services in the city, and that's the other impact of losing people in the council.
I hesitate to say it, but looking at the budget papers, you know, I've may have stepped out of the political limelight, but reading some of these papers, a lot of the savings seem to be predicated upon things going as planned. There seem to be a lot of caveats there about meeting the targets. How confident are you, Les, of actually meeting the targets to actually achieve these savings that you've set out in the proposals?
Well, I think the last 2 years have shown that we have an amount of savings that we anticipate being making in the year. We don't always make the whole lot. You're quite correct. I believe, speaking of the last 2 years, we've managed normally to make somewhere about 85 to 90% of the proposed savings. But normally speaking, we've been able to then fill the hole from somewhere else. You know, we're talking about cuts in services, but as you said earlier on, next year we're having to plan to put an extra £10 million into adult social care and children's services. And no administration of any party can run a council for years without making, in the current situation, without making some economies. I'll just remind Ollie, we haven't closed any libraries, which he can't claim his previous administration
into. You tried pretty hard, Les.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
He said you tried pretty hard, and I seem to remember...
No, we didn't try pretty hard. We tried to relocate a library, which is not quite the same as closing a library.
Well,
downsizing
a lot of people would see that differently, I think.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm pleased as a former postholder that libraries are continuing, and I'm very pleased that Alan Robbins has taken up the scheme that I introduced when I was a councillor, where we had round-the-clock access to libraries. Which has enabled a number of them to be open for much longer without central staff.
You sound like you miss
we
it,
miss
Jeffrey.
You, Jeffrey. No, this is terrible. Come back, all is forgiven.
I don't make a claim that the Labour Party's got a monopoly of making good decisions. That libraries expert has been very successful, and as you say, he's enabled us to keep all the libraries open, whereas up and down the country, large numbers of councils have closed large numbers of libraries.
Yes,
we've not had to do.
There's absolutely no denying that. I think another former councillor might say that libraries have been kept open, but the stock has been reduced. But let's just take a pause, because there seems to be some unanimity on libraries at least, and turn to Andrew. Now, you've been on the programme before. You know about the Desert Island Disc moment. And perhaps you'd just tell us what you've decided to make as your special musical moment this time round.
I'd like Human League, Don't You Want Me Baby, from 1981. I was watching BBC4's Top of the Pops 1981 the other night, and brought back some very happy memories of when I used to work in a Saturday job in Turner Shoes in Newcastle, and we all used to go out afterwards. And it was one of the Christmas hits of 1981, so I'd like to hear that, please.
Oh, I've got an image in my mind, you in your glitter affair, in your glitter gear.
I was less glittery in 1981.
Okay, so let's take a pause while we listen to that old favourite. Okay, welcome back, and there's a lot of jitterbugging going on in the studio here, and I don't know what has been going on with the Hamilton household. So we were talking about the kind of dramas and what has been saved. Les was very proud that libraries are not going to be affected. I take it that youth services this year are also protected?
There's no savings proposals this year in youth services.
Okay. But what are the other sort of vulnerable areas, Ollie, as far as you see?
I did bring a little list. I mean, I think a lot of the savings proposed are associated with changes such as Orbis, and, you know, increases.
Orbis, Orbis
is the entity set up by East Sussex, Surrey, and the Brighton Hove Council to bring together central and support services. So. Finance, HR, legal, things like that. So, which was started under the Greens. It's another one of these initiatives that you know, rolls over in different administrations. I think obviously we all think it's a good idea, or we wouldn't have got this far. And so the savings are associated with bringing those services together and efficiencies of scale. But I mean, looking down the list of what I would call actual cuts to services, adult social care and children's social care are being asked to find significant savings in their work. I've already mentioned family coaches, some of the most expensive areas of the council work in adult social care are also having to find significant savings. And it was interesting, we had our audit and standards committee pre-meet yesterday, which is very, very interesting. And one of the areas for work in the council is in controlling some of the contracts that we have with adult social care providers, because we're not always doing all we can to keep those costs to a minimum. So there's huge pressure there, but we also really need to keep an eye on the costs of community care and associated provision as well. And you know, I mean, that's a fair enough approach, but we're also seeing significant cuts in mental health support, dementia support, physical support and home care, and you know, these are in the hundreds of thousands of pounds. Mm-hmm. So you know, I wouldn't like to be at the receiving end of some of these cuts, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I think you've been on the other end of the political spectrum when you've had to set a budget, so you know how difficult it is. Andrew, your group leader, your new group leader, this is the first budget he'll have
Tony
to face,
Janio, yeah.
Tony Janio, criticised the initial budget proposals, saying there's nothing innovative here. So what are your innovations to save money and deliver the same top flight services to the public?
The difficulty is I think that the way that, and I think that successive administrations have been guilty of this, to be honest, is the degree to which there is investment in preventative services. And so, for example, I would suggest that the cuts that the administration made last year to youth services were actually building up problems in the future. There are always proposals to
But those
cut.
Were reversed.
No, they weren't. They're partly reversed. As I said, there was a £505,000 cut in youth services last year. We only managed to restore 400 and something thousand of a proposed 800,000 cut. The things like, for example, as I've said before, short breaks for families with disabled children is an area where once if a family breaks down...
Is that respite care?
Respite care, yeah. I mean, if a family breaks down, the costs, not just obviously the personal tragedies for that family, but the cost to the council are just, you know, you can imagine the cost sometimes £500,000 to £1 million to take a profoundly disabled child into care. So the question is whether the skew of the council spending is in the right direction to prevent some of these things happening.
So when Tony Janio says a lack of fresh initiatives, and then he kind of has a little pop, as you would expect in this kind of politics, from the moderate Labour councillors. So I suspect what he's suggesting is that if they were following the lines of the Jeremy Corbyn branch of Labour, they would be more radical and they would actually withstand some of the council the cuts being imposed on them by the government.
Are you asking me to say what Tony Janio thinks the momentum would do about the budget?
Because that's a sort of double whammy there.
I know, I'm just reading. I'm just reading what he said. He said, we expected a lack of fresh initiatives and ideas from moderate Labour councillors as they protect themselves against a momentum onslaught.
Well, here's an example, okay. So there are spending increases, as Ollie said. I mean, there are huge increases in expenditure on adult social care, and there is improved funding from the Better Care Fund of 7 odd million, which offsets the revenue support grant cut to help support some of the pressures that we have in those areas. But the council makes its priorities, and some of those priorities are politically driven. And say one example here is one which the Green Party supported at Policy and Resources Committee a couple of weeks ago, which is an extra £50,000 a year to UNIS and the GMB for union facility time. Now,
so the
council a couple of years ago spent £200,000 a year giving that to the unions to, in inverted commas, support staff or whatever the role of the unions consider themselves to be. The Labour administration cut that £50,000 last year. They restored that £50,000 with one-off money from the underspend last year. Now they're restoring it permanently. So they've made a decision that it's important to spend £200,000 on union facility time. And the argument they've made for that is that the unions are helping staff transition through difficult structural changes in the council. My challenge is whether we've seen actual evidence of that support. The other question is when Labour first took control, I thought one of the very helpful things they did was go through all of the, at least most of the spending proposals and savings proposals in the budget and give a rating as to whether we were high, medium or low cost relative to peer group councils. Now, I admit that's a can of worms once you start doing those sorts of calculations. But, for example, there were many services, particularly things like some of the city clean services, but also some of the services for people with disabilities were very high cost. And the challenge was whether the outcomes that we were getting for some of those high cost services were actually value for money. They've stopped providing that information and it's been quite difficult to get some of it. So from my perspective, actually challenging how Labour have delivered this budget and how they've determined whether we are high, low or medium cost in various services is very difficult to get to the bottom of. And I can't see how you can deliver a budget without actually understanding whether you're getting value for money in many of your service lines.
I believe the latest City Tracker report shows that the Labour administration is faring pretty well. So maybe you are getting
well. You're comparing them to the Greens before, you see. So
hang on.
I'll give you that one.
hold on. Les is sitting back and smiling at all this. but I mean, just going back to this stipend for the union representation. Do you think that? I mean, I'm just returned to what Tony Janio said and his reference to momentum, which now appears to have got itself into key positions in every constituency Labour Party group to select who will stand and who won't stand in the next election. Do you think that's influenced their decision on this particular budget proposal?
I honestly think that question's best directed to Les. You're asking me.
He'll say no, I know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, all we hear is gossip and tittle-tattle about what's going on in the Labour Party. My priority for the city, I think, is obviously to see a Conservative administration next time round. But actually, what I want to see in the meantime is a responsible, well-run Labour Party that's not riven by internal disputes, stopping them making some of the difficult choices that they need to make for the city. Now, it's up to Les and his colleagues to describe why that's the case and why they're not being led by momentum, and that's really genuinely a question for them.
Mm. And I suppose really Les will say, and I'll say it for him, that the Conservatives aren't exactly united as they wade through the Brexit debates going
forward. Yeah, well, Labour's not united on that either. I mean, I think actually the Green groups, actually, wasn't your leadership
divided on Brexit as well.
Let's leave that to one side.
You brought it up. Now, if you're going to start saying groups are divided on Brexit, then you can, you know, go until the cows come home.
Let's bring Les back into this debate and just focus a little bit on this small amount, £50,000 for union representation. It sounds a wee bit as if Andrew doesn't want to fund any union representation in the council.
Did I say that?
You didn't want the recognition agreement.
Okay. No, we didn't, actually. We didn't want the first union recognition
agreement. So is the £50,000 you've suddenly found out of the budget as a way of calming down the momentum elements in the Labour Party?
My recollection is that we had £50,000 cut in the budget proposed, and I think after further discussions which were had with the union and so on, I believe that £50,000 was reinstated. All I can say is that there are fewer people now paid by the council as union representatives than when we came in. There has been a reduction. So although there's still a fair number, there has been a reduction in the numbers there. I don't think the momentum issue comes into it. As far as I'm concerned, we are carrying on running the council in the same way they've been trying to do for the last 2.5 years. And I've been in the Labour Party over 50 years. I've been a councillor for 45 years. I've been through Militant and various other groups in the past. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm in the Labour Party full stop, and that's how I carry on. What will happen next time in elections is anybody's guess. But I've no doubt that all these stories about the whole of the council is going to be dismissed and so on, I think there's no truth in that whatsoever. No party would dismiss the whole of its councillors and bring in an entirely new, completely new group. It would be
I hope you're right, Les, but it depends which half are going to be retained is the key question, isn't it?
At the moment, we're just opening our panel of candidates. So at the present time, when people say so-and-so has been deselected and so on, we've only just opened the panel to get the panel together. We certainly haven't started choosing our candidates yet, which I believe the Conservatives have already finished there. So
we
haven't yet gone down the road yet, so we can't really tell what's going to happen on the selection procedures. But I'm sure that most of my sitting councillor colleagues will put their names forward again. We've got a lot of very good people in our group, and I'm sure most of those people that want to be reselected will be.
We're straying slightly off the budget, but it's my fault for actually bringing...
Exactly
my fault for taking us down this route, but it's kind of was linked to the issue of the budget proposals for union support, and I really wanted just to probe to see whether this was a response to the a perceived threat. We've already had one front page story about a challenge to the supremacy of Warren Morgan. And I notice actually in the media that Warren Morgan is very diligent now of reporting everything he's doing almost on a daily basis to show how hard he's working, which brings a slight smile to my face anyway. taking it back to the budget, is it your anticipated view that you'll get a good outcome in terms of the amounts that you can raise from businesses and also from the households available, so that when that report comes through that determines how many properties there are and how many businesses are, do you think that's going to make up any shortfall? You've still on the current proposals, you've got over £1 million light.
We're 1.2 million pound light at the present time. Obviously, at the moment, we're still 1.2 million pound overspent on this year's budget. Obviously, we're hoping that will come back too, but we have got a 1.5 million pound risk provision, which I think we should meet that. When we get the council tax base, yes, I think there will be. It will, in fact, mean that the £1 council tax on a band deed property, which is what it's based on, will in fact increase. But my understanding is that we're expecting, in fact, a slight reduction in what we get from. Business rates in the year ahead, according to the last figures that I saw.
So that's going to put the gap even larger than.
No, I think that's been incorporated into it. I think they've already incorporated that in their figures. But just bear in mind, you talked earlier about a 5% increase in council tax, which will bring in £6.2 million. But we are losing £7 million of our revenue support grant. So in fact, we are still in net terms no better off, and we've got to find £13.5 million for pressures, of which we've identified 12 so far, or just over 12. So we're still 1.2 million short, as you rightly say.
So we've
got the local government statement coming on December the 19th. Who knows what that will bring? It might make matters worse, but we keep our fingers crossed and hope it might make matters better.
Andrew, you're indicating... If listeners can hear a lot of rustling of papers, because both Ollie and Andrew have come armed with
Well, I've actually just got the budget papers in front of me, and I'm just looking for the page, and I can't find it. But in fact, actually, we do get better care funding, additional funding, which offsets that reduction that Les is talking about, plus an extra 1.7 million of transitional better care funding as well. So the government is making... I appreciate the challenges in social care are enormous, and the full provision hasn't been made by central government, but it has gone some way to supporting us in that. So I just wanted to make sure that listeners were aware of that.
But can I come back on that, because I haven't spoken for a little while? I mean, I think apart from anything else, I mean, I think taking it back to national government, what seems to happen year on year is that we get these 2 or 3 year chunks of money, so the Better Care Fund and the Improved Better Care Fund, and then in addition to that, at the end of the year, we might get extra Philips, a couple hundred thousand pounds for temporary accommodation combating rough sleeping, all that kind of stuff. You can't plan on this basis. We've got no idea what's going to happen with 100% retention of business rates after 2019-20. There's pilot projects in London for retention of business rates at 100%. We this council cannot plan beyond the next couple of years, and we can't operate on a year-to-year basis on the basis of end-of-year little lumps of money. It's impossible to plan.
Perhaps we just sort of explain, because we're getting slightly technical and we may be losing some listeners here. Tax is made up of two elements, essentially, or three elements, I guess. But we get a grant from central government, which
that's
is reducing
council tax, council
funding. Yeah. Beg your pardon, and then we get what individuals pay on each household, plus what businesses pay,
and fees and charges,
interestingly, maybe we can look at, you've got the papers there, how much revenue is generated from these dreaded parking fees?
I think we know that. That's talked about in the press quite a lot, isn't it? It's 22 million, something like that. Yeah, but I mean, we know. Most of that goes. I think a few million of that goes into managing the service, and the bulk of it goes into concessionary fares. So, yeah.
So it's hypothetical.
Can I just agree with Ollie? Because where I really, really sympathise. I think it's incredibly difficult to plan because of exactly the mechanisms that he's suggested. And I don't think that local government funding works as it's set up. And I think we need a long-term sustainable funding methodology for local government. I think you're absolutely right in that respect.
How long is it since there's been a revaluation of properties in Brighton and Hove? Well,
it's just been done.
It has been.
That's what's caused all the... Right. Oh, sorry, revaluation of businesses, you mean, for business rates.
Well, business rates, but also council tax bans.
It's never been done since it was introduced in 1991, was it? So the banding, obviously, is as a house would have been priced in 1990-whatever.
Well, house prices have gone up enormously. How can that... surely a Conservative government would look at that and say, well... this is not equitable.
Yeah, but we've got to remember Brighton and Hove would lose out if that were the case, because our house prices have gone up more than the rest of the country proportionately, so our share of taxes would go up disproportionately if that were the case. So I think we've got to be careful what we wish for in that respect.
Okay, well, we're going to take another musical break, and the final one, and perhaps, Ollie, you would like to tell us what you've come up with as your bit of special musical moment.
Yeah, well, I'm a great fan of what used to be called world music, and so the song I would like to play is by a Cape Verdean singer called Cesaria Evora. The song is called Sodad, S-O-D-A-D-E, and it reminds me of time in West Africa many years ago.
Marvellous. Well, let's pause to listen to this piece of world music, and then we'll come back and conclude this conversation. To everyone's relief, I should imagine. But let's hear Ollie's choice. Let's conclude this conversation. We've got these two set pieces to go through before we get to the budget drama. we're expecting everything to go through smoothly, or a bit of a fight from the two opposition parties here? Andrew?
It's too early to talk. Obviously, we'll spend a lot of time talking to Ollie and his colleagues, and we'll spend a lot of time talking to Les and his colleagues and see if we can come to agreements on what we want to achieve and see what happens. We're incredibly open-minded on this process and will continue to be so.
Ollie?
I would echo what Andrew said. Can I make a slightly sort of tangential point on this? I think we've talked a lot about the specific numbers affecting our budget and the specific areas that are going to be suffering cuts and stuff. I mean, I think there's another point I think which is very important to our group is our ability to scrutinise good information, openness and transparency in the budget. I think, well, and one other principle for the budget is also things like preventative services, which are very important to us. But I've had the opportunity over the past couple of months to look at the way some other councils sort of run their finances, and I have to say that the quality of the information that we get in Brighton and Hove is very, very good compared to what some councils have, and we are actually in a slightly better position than some other councils which don't have such good quality information. And related to that is the ability of members to scrutinise that information, and I think again we're in quite a good position in that we have we've got a three-party council, no overall control, close scrutiny of good information. So I think that really helps the budget process. If you look at the way some other councils aren't in that position, and they're in a much worse financial situation than we are. So and that does relate to political priorities in the future by Labour in particular, who would really like to go back to the committee system. I think going back to the committee system in Brighton Hove Council. Sorry, going back to the cabinet system rather, from the committee system, which would reduce the ability of members to scrutinise information. And I think in the context of the budget, those sort of conversations are quite important. I think the ability, our ability to scrutinise budget material and the committee system is very important. I know it's a dry topic, but it's there on the horizon, so I did want to raise it.
Okay, well, I seem to remember, Les, that when the Greens were in administration, we started out with a cabinet system. Both the Greens and the Conservative group made it clear that they were in favour of going back to a committee system, although the then leader had some kind of hybrid proposal, which not even his own group understood. We went back to the committee system. So is it true that you'd like to go back to a cabinet system to determine all these things?
That's a really interesting question, because I think it's fair to say that, as a general rule, the largest party, if they've not got an overall majority, wishes they were in a cabinet system, and the opposition parties are happy to be with a committee system. And I think that's always going to be the case, and I don't know what the situation will be, but obviously I cannot see a situation where we go back to a cabinet system unless and until a party's got an overall majority and decides that that's what they want to do. Because I don't think opposition parties are general rule. Now, Ollie's quite right. When there's a committee system, there is far more opportunity to challenge things and to put your point of view forward. Because I can remember when the cabinet system, I used to get a few cabinet meetings, I could see the 12 Conservatives sitting around the table discussing things amongst themselves, and there's very little, not so much opportunity for opposition parties to have their say. So, I mean, obviously, from my point of view, I haven't got any strong view either way. It may be that we need some kind of halfway house system. I don't know, but it's a very complicated issue to try to resolve, I think, and it's always going to depend on personal or political parties' situations rather than on the actual basic principle of the thing.
But in a situation we find ourselves in and have for the last few years of no overall control council, wouldn't it be better if all three parties got together to start setting the budget? Do you think that's just always going to be the responsibility of the largest party to meet their political priorities?
We have budget review groups through the year, as and when the next stage in the budget process. We've had these budget review groups with all the executive directors, and the budget's going to be looked at. And then clearly, of course, we've had the budget papers were released on November the 30th, 125 pages of them, which gives obviously the other two parties plenty of time to, if they want to, as I say, come and have a meeting with me or with Warren, or to see what they're unhappy about and to bring that forward. So I think it has to, at the end of the day, be almost a cross-party thing, because obviously we cannot get a budget through entirely on our own. And so consequently, we have to get either the Conservative Party or the Green Party to vote with us, or at least one of those two to abstain, in order to be able to produce a budget. So to that point of view, and as you rightly said earlier on, the vast majority of the budget would have to be agreed under any administration, because we've got statutory duties which we have to comply with. And so therefore, as I say, I think we have got a situation where the parties can and do have their say in the final budget.
Just a comment, if you will, Les, on the proposal by the police commissioner, because you are concerned with the council tax setting part of this budget process. She is concerned with the police precept, and she's proposing to increase again, having originally been elected, I believe, on the proposal of not putting up the police precept. She's now proposing to increase it. Would you like to comment on her proposal to increase the precept? Because that will fall on taxpayers' shoulders in addition to council tax demands.
Well, I don't know how much. I haven't seen the details as to how much she wants to put it up. I don't know whether I thought they were restricted to the extent that they could put it up, because it was the case, wasn't there, in Bedfordshire, where the police commissioner wanted it to go up, and in fact what happened was it went to a referendum and it was thrown out by a majority of 2-1 that they didn't want it to go up. Having said that, I think you've certainly got to look at a paper locally. I think there's no doubt that the actual number of police now that we have around to see on the beat or on the street is very, very small. We used to have 4 in Portslade, two community support officers in the north, 2 in the south, who we saw on a regular basis. I think we've now got about one support officer. So I think it's a case that if the public are concerned about policing and public safety and so on, they may or may not. It depends on the size of the increase, I think. I mean, we appreciate ourselves that we've got to put greater income, and if the police have got to do it to provide a service that the public will anticipate and expect, then it may be a case that has to happen as well. But I haven't seen the details of that, so I can't really make a fully informed comment.
Andrew, you're in the same party as Katie Bourne, the police commissioner. What would your message be to her about containing her demands for more money to come out of our hard-pressed pockets?
I honestly think that's a message. That's something for Katie to answer. I can't answer.
Oh, ducking!
I'm so sorry. I am going to duck that one.
The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Les, Andrew, and Ollie, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Tackling this rather nutty problem that we have to contend with each year. Thank you again for your choices of music. Thank you for listening, everyone, and goodbye.